If you have an appetite for fun, then the Disney California Adventure Food and Wine Festival is the place to be. March 2nd through April 12th, only at the Disneyland Resort. Enjoy deliciously fresh food, California wines, craft beers, specialty cocktails, live music, and more. All served up with a dash of Disney magic. Get more details at disneyland.com/foodandwine.
Support for this podcast comes from UCSF Medical Center. UCSF Medical Center is ranked the number one hospital in California by U.S. News & World Report. UCSF Health, redefining possible.
Hello? Hello? Hello?
Elvira, I can hear you.
Okay.
The Witch, The Priestess, and The Cauldron, a podcast featuring Elvira Love and Phoenix LaFay, two out-of-the-broom-closet professional witches with over 70 years combined experience of making magic. This is a show on the LMC Radio Network. During each show, Elvira and Phoenix will help you create rituals, make spells, make potions, and much more besides. They'll spend time speaking about different goddesses from all over the world, paying attention to the ancient reverence of long-ago cultures and infusing it with a modern perspective. Elvira, Phoenix, take it away.
Hey, Elvira, can you hear me?
I can hear you now.
Well, we had a little bit of fun technical stuff this morning.
No kidding. Are we sure it's not a Mercury retrograde yet?
Nope.
Oh, darn. I was hoping we could justify it on something.
Yeah, sadly so. Not. Just regular computer shenanigans.
I got it. Well, that's a better thing than Mercury retrograde at this point. It does seem like that with all the things that are going on. Should I ask, you know, if I were to ask you anything, what's been happening just recently with you since we're technically going to be talking in the future?
Right, that's true, right? This show is coming to you from the past because it will air the day after Thanksgiving when we are both doing other things.
Basically called retail sales and, oh my God, Christmas is almost here.
Right, which is basically where I am today. And I imagine tomorrow when we do our live show, I will also be in the same place of basically a chicken with its head cut off. I have a little too late, amount of hours a day, and then a few, you know, fires, of course, always pop up and need to be dealt with at the last minute. So that's kind of where I'm at right now is dealing with the last minute fires that I can put out before they turn blazes that take over the world.
Right.
Yeah,
well,
busy.
Yeah, I know. I'm doing mine only 2,500 miles away. My daughter is having some issues with her stepchildren, and I didn't know this, and I've been trying to push her to get me the Christmas list so that I can get things sent to them, so when I'm there, you know, 2 days before Christmas, I won't have the hysteria of Christmas shopping. It will all be taken care of via the magic internet. And
smart.
Well, which is good, but it turns out there's a lot of stuff going on, and she didn't tell me. She just kept getting shorter and shorter with me. So unfortunately, it finally boiled over, and she told me kind of all of what was happening, obviously via text. But So now we're, you know, kind of like, oh, okay, now I understand why we've had such a problem. And there we are. So harsh and difficult. But anyway, so obviously our topic for today is Odin. And I'm sure
right, which may be why we had issues, because he is the trickster.
That is true. Along with a lot of other things that he does. Yes, it was fascinating. After I do more research on things that I don't necessarily always talk about, and I know that, you know, you talk about, you know, the goddesses, and in turns there are the gods that kind of follow in with the grouping. And so I had a feeling I was going to be behind the eight ball here with information. So I tried to really push myself. So do you want to take
the
lead?
Well, I'm sure he
Yeah, well, I'm sure he does too. Actually, the more I read about him, I'm looking at it going, isn't it interesting, J.R.R. Tolkien, how he took the concept of Odin the Wanderer as one of his characters.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he was super into Norse mythology, so there you can see a lot of it. With Norse mythology, you can easily see it in the stories that he's written. It's pretty fascinating.
Yeah. So, but I mean, obviously, he is. I found it kind of interesting. Of course, you know, being a feminist, when you hear the All Father, you kind of go, ugh, you know. But that's okay, as far as that's concerned.
Yeah,
I know.
Yeah, Odin's a tricky one because he's got that all-father, definitely patriarchal type of energy going on. And then he has all these other interesting things about him, you know, like doing the being trained in the arts that only women typically hold. And
right.
You know, showing up in places that typically women only power. And so there's some weird, interesting things about Odin. And I think, you know, like I say, anytime I do any type of work around the gods, we have to keep in mind and remember that we can't possibly fully understand the concepts here. You know, we can intellectualize it, and we might do it on a spiritual or emotional level, but the culture that these gods were born in and thrived in is gone. And so trying to wrap our heads around all of these things, we're looking at them with the lens of what our modern constructs and modern society tell us, and that's not the same as what these ancient societies would have done and would have believed and would have worked like. So I think it's really important that people remember that, especially with deities from the Norse pantheon and the Germanic pantheons, because there is a lot of, unfortunately, there are a lot of racist groups and bigoted groups that are doing reconstructionist work within the Norse pantheon. And there's this whole racist group called the Sons of Odin, who are total pieces of crap and trying to revitalize Norse mythology and Norse worship and these old school traditions with this guise of white supremacy. And that's totally not how it was. And you have to be when you get involved with groups that do Norse practice to make sure you're not dealing with a bigoted group, because unfortunately there are a lot of them out there.
Right. And I know that even one of the, you know, the things that are part of his symbols, or the things that are part of the, what do they call them, magical tools, is a swastika, which unfortunately, because of what has happened in history more recently, it makes that particular symbol evil, and it associates it with bigotry and, you know, a lot of the horrid things that happened in more recent past. So,
right.
Yeah, this is part of what, and I can't really say it's about revisioning. It's sometimes it's so damaged
yeah.
that I don't know if the words you know, revitalize and revision and, you know, that kind of a thing can actually happen.
Right. Yeah, and it's tricky, too, because, well, here, let me take a step backwards. So with and I keep saying Norse, but Odin is bigger than Norse.
Yeah.
Odin is Germanic and Scandinavian, and he has a wide range of worship. He was a lot of places, and even when there's unfortunately or fortunately, depending on how you feel about these things, a lot of what we have from the Germanic peoples is given to us from the Romans, and the information that the Romans wrote down dealing with some of these Germanic tribes. And then a lot of what we have from Scandinavia was written down in Iceland. So we don't actually have a lot of information from the horses' mouths, right? But from the other cultures who witnessed or learned about or wrote down later. So that's also something to remember, to take all of this with a little bit of salt, because the Odin worshippers weren't the ones writing about Odin.
Right. Well, and isn't that true about what happened with even the British Isles and the Celtic and the, you know, pagan or Wiccan, well, probably witchcraft, actually, is that the people weren't really writing it down themselves.
No. And, you know, that's what we owe a lot to the Romans, and you have to take it all with a grain of salt, because they like us, were putting their own filters on what it all meant. And the way the Romans worked was assimilation. So they didn't take your gods away. They just said, oh, that god's just like this god, so now we're going to call it this name instead. Or we're going to, like, for example, Sulis is a Celtic goddess. Of a very specific water system in England, and the Romans came and said, oh, that's just like Minerva. So from now on, her name is Minerva Sulis. So you don't have to stop worshiping her, just you need to understand she's the same as Minerva. And that's fine, but it's not true. You know, it's not necessarily true. And that happened with a lot of the information from the Germanic tribes with Odin. The Romans felt that Odin was just like Mercury, just like the god Mercury. And they're very different. If you start digging into the myths and the stories, they have some things in common, sure, but they're not by any stretch of the imagination the same deity. But I want to take a step back to just talk a little bit from the Norse perspective. It's likely that Odin originated in the Germanic tribes in that region of the world, because in Scandinavia what we have is this war of the gods. We have the Aesir and the Vanir, and Odin is the king of the Aesir. So once upon a time there were all of these gods in the Vanir, and mostly what we know, and we don't know, they didn't lose the war, but once the war was being fought, their stories kind of. So the Vanir were considered the god of the land. Freya, for example, is one of the Vanir. Her brother Freyr is one of the Vanir. Their father, whose name is escaping my brain, they're Vanir. They're the old gods. Then the new gods come in. The Aesir come in. And this is, you see, time again, this is the patriarchal gods, the Sky Father. Just like Zeus, the Sky Father, they come in and it changes the landscape of how people worship. And with the Aesir and the Vanir, they fought a war forever. There's stories and stories and stories of the fighting and the war between the Aesir and the Vanir. And finally, all of the realms of the gods recognize no one's ever going to win, so we need to just stop fighting. So you give us some hostages, and we'll give you some hostages, and then we'll just move on. So from that moment forward, it's really just the Aesir. However, Freya and Freyr and their father Njord, the sea god, they come and stay with the Aesir. So now it's most of the tales that we have are after that war was fought, and the sky gods come in and things change. And it's likely that the Germanic tribes actually literally invaded into Scandinavia and brought Odin with them. And this is, then there was assimilation.
Yeah. And interesting enough, thinking as I'm hearing you talk about this, it's very, I would almost say that in reality, that makes for a interesting mediated peace.
Yeah.
That maybe we might want to think of that in for the present time in our world, because here we are, we're all, you know, whether it's in the United States with the Republicans and the Democrats and whatever, or we're talking about different countries and ideologies, it might work if you did that. I know that, you know, we talk about peace. Well, peace usually is somebody conquering the other person, and thus peace is established, meaning we now have
right.
decimated you to, you know, bring you down. And yet this actually gives almost for both the Aesir and the Vanir, it gives them dignity.
Right.
Because they fight, but they also come to an agreement that this is forever if we don't get our shit together. And there's a whole lot more going on out there that we might be better suited looking at and dealing with. So I don't know. It was kind of like, oh, there could be a bigger model, not that I think, you know, some world leader is going to listen to us and suddenly go, aha, but it might happen.
Oh, it could. Yeah. Let's root for that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, obviously, now we have the Aesir, and we have a culture that
yeah.
they have started with the different deities and the different aspects of what Odin takes on, correct?
Right. Right. Mm-hmm. Right. And, you know, one of the most classic stories of Odin is this world tree story, right? Where he, Odin, in the origin stories in Norse mythology, Odin is one of the first sons. There was the giant, and then Odin and his two brothers, who you never hear about really, were born. And the brothers and Odin killed the giant and used his body to create the world. So his bones and flesh and things became the landscape, and his blood became the rivers. And it's very gruesome. They're like, hey, thanks for bringing us life. Now we're going to murder you and make our world out of you. It's quite gruesome. but Odin's been around since the beginning. Now, that's probably not true of any. They probably have a different origin story, but we don't know that. And so Odin, he has this violent energy. He's a war god. However, he also chose to hang around the tree for 9 days and nine nights in order to gain wisdom. That's how the runes were born. He gave of an eye to a well of wisdom in order to gain wisdom. He sacrifices himself time and time again in order to get wisdom, in order to bring gifts to people and the gods. And so he practices scyther magic, which is the magic do. So he has this war, fighting, death, sky god energy, but then he has this feminine, sacrificial, do what needs to be done for the good of all, wisdom seeking energy too. So he's quite dynamic. Often gods are kind of put into holes, like, okay, you're the war god and you're the sex goddess and you're this goddess and you're this goddess, but he's very well rounded. I kind of get pigeonholed as something not quite so well rounded.
Right. And obviously, you know, when I went looking, I mean, there's a book I was looking at, and it says, you know, different things that these different gods can help you with, and they're, you know, so it was like magic and all this, and I kid you not, I have half of a page of written things this deity is called upon or can be through all these
right.
different things. A lot of them are, you know, different aspects of a particular thing, you know, in terms of, you know, cunning and war and, you know, things like that, but overcoming obstacles, stuff like that. But it was really, I was just totally amazed at all of the magnitude of what he encompasses as
an
energy pattern to deal with.
Right. Yeah, and his name translates to a lot of different things. You know, we have Odin, which is how we're referring to him. And if you've listened to the show before, you know that my pronunciation and accent is shite. So I apologize in advance if I start to pronounce anything. His name has been found across Europe and into Scandinavia. So there's a lot of different places where his energetic has touched. And we have Woden and Wotan, Woden, Wotanaz, Wodaz. And there's all these different versions of his name from Dutch and Latin, and all these different places. But his name translates as many different things. And one of them is seer, prophet, madness, zeal, and faith. But madness comes up a lot. Mm-hmm. Many translations are madness, to rage, to be insane, frantic. Where is the other one? Oh, sorcery, poetry, and frenzy. So if you look at the origins of his name, it's vastly fascinating. And you kind of have to give a little bit more study and prayer and thought and meditation on the origins of the name, because that means something, and that's not always what's written about.
Right, right. And you can tell when you start doing any kind of research that this particular deity was taken by the, you know, we'll call them Viking Norsemen. And as they traveled, of course, so too did their gods and goddesses. And he comes up, and it's interesting, when I heard frenzy, I thought, you know, the battle frenzy of the berserkers, you know. And it doesn't mean he's always on the side of the people he is worshipped by. Sometimes he kind of does a little trickster thing and works for the enemy, and, you know, kind of, you really see this deity as a life of its own in its truest sense. I mean, like, as you say, a lot of the deities are pigeonholed. He isn't.
Right.
So he kind of goes wherever and does whatever. And, you know, so worshiping Odin was a really difficult thing, because sometimes he turned on you. As an energy and as a deity, he would do something against what you were doing, and it wasn't frivolous. It's just he did his own thing at any given moment.
Right. There is a quote from one of the sagas. So the Prose Edda and the Poetic Edda are a lot of writings about the old myths. So they're great sources if you. But one of the sagas describes Odin. This is a quote: "When he sat with his friends, he gladdened the spirits of all of them. But when he was at war, his demeanor was terrifyingly grim."
That sort of says it, doesn't it?
I know, right? It's good. I like it.
Yeah. But, yeah. So he definitely has. I mean, and, you know, when you get certain things that he does, I mean, poetry, you know, and that's, I could see poetry and, you know, the written word being white. The Romans would go, "Oh, we'll put him over here with Mercury," but
right.
You know, so there are different.
Right, and he also can travel between the realms, which is something that Mercury does. You know, so I get it, but it's
too limiting.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so that, you know, and I really, and it, when you start reading what people have written, you understand that they're coming with their lens. And I do know that when he gave up his eye, it was a sacrifice. But the eye was never really gone, because it wound up in the other world. So in some ways, metaphorically, you sacrifice certain things to be able to either get something here in the real world, as per se, like he chose to learn the runes. It became the runes. It became the discovery and bringing that forth. But it also means contacting in the other realm and seeing from the other realm, from the mystical realm.
Right. So you have to give up your normal seeing eyes.
Yeah. So yeah. I was very I was impressed with this in the way it was vastly open to these different aspects, and as you say, traveling with the feminine energies as well as the masculine mm-hmm. energies. So in an interesting process, though, I come to him and I look at him and I go, you're a war god, and you're, you know, you deal with all these frenzy things, and, you know, and but there is this other part. And
right.
So that, I don't say it softens him, because I just don't see that being warm and cuddly, but
right.
I would say it gives a different, a deeper vision of him.
Yeah. And if, you know, read, go online and read, there's lots of great information about Odin, but something I want to stress the point of the Norse folks, the Scandinavian folks, these ancient Germanic peoples, they are not just the warmongering clans that we think of or that have been popularized in movies. There's actually a lot more to it. And the way that, you know, something I read when I was taking notes on the things I wanted to talk about was that, you know, Odin was also involved in the feminine arts, which would have been embarrassing to someone of Norse mythology or the folks who were worshiping him. That's bullshit. That's utter bullshit. To say that it would have been embarrassing to be connected to the feminine arts, that is a modern lens. That is a modern belief, because you can't possibly know, A, you can't know what would have been embarrassing to these ancient people, and B, they didn't have lines drawn in the sand for men and women like we do. It was much blurrier. And how could Odin be the ultimate supreme deity if what he did was embarrassing to humans? Bullshit. And
right.
And women were warriors. Women fought alongside men. So it makes absolutely no sense that there wouldn't have been effeminate men who would have done the quote unquote work. You know what I mean? I think the lines were much blurrier than what modern people might want them to think or believe, not think. But, you know, there's no way that the head of the gods, the All-Father, would have done something that the human beings would have found embarrassing. That's not how it works. You don't worship
right.
a god that you think is wrong.
mm-hmm.
You know?
That's true.
So I think that there's a lot here in it. I think it actually, just reading about Odin, is much more interesting and open and wise these ancient and Norse people would have been about gender and sexuality and what the roles, the traditional roles of men and women would have been. I think it would have been a lot blurrier. And I get I'm saying that with my own desire. I totally understand it. But I can also take a step outside and go, no, this just makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Of course. And, you know, the one thing that seems, I found in different versions is that they talk about Odin as not being omniscient, that he also is, you know, flawed. He is a, you know, that gives you the sense that, yes, he's the best choice of all this to do this, but there's still these other things that aren't really great about him. And
right.
I think that makes it a lot easier for someone to connect than when you're trying to connect with something that is so like above and beyond, and we'll, it's like the ideal and we'll never achieve it, but we can always try concept that seems to have pervaded a lot, not
mm-hmm.
just, you know, Christianity, but a lot of the cultures and their pantheons.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, you mentioned not everything that he did was great. No, he has this trickster energy to him. He disguises himself up and takes advantage of unsuspecting women. He
mm-hmm.
makes wagers with his wife on what kind of drama he can cause and how it's going to come out at the end. So, you know, he's a shit disturber too.
Yeah.
You know, so that is also something to know. This isn't just the good god. This is an interesting god who plays games, and often Freya is kind of his counterpart. They fight a lot. They have a lot that they have in common. They have to split the warriors that die for the, you know, the end of days in Norse mythology, Ragnarok, when we all have to fight and the gods finally die. The every Asgard's Ragnarok. So Freya gets her slain warriors and Odin gets the leftovers. And there's a lot of stories where the two of them have to deal with each other, or fight with each other, or argue with each other. And so that's also interesting, you know, how Freya shows up in this pantheon and her relationship with Odin. And Odin's wife is Frigg or Frigga, and there is some debate that perhaps, if you go back far enough, Frigga and Freya were the same goddess, and they started as the same, if that's true, or if Frigga originated in the Germanic region and Freya was in Norway or Sweden or whatever up there, and when the migration happened, they were kind of joined together. Who knows? But there is something interesting there, too, to explore the relationship with Frigga and Freya and Odin.
Yeah, yeah. And as you're talking, it's like I'm seeing that the culture, in its truest sense, the deities exactly, I mean, I think I know why Romans, you know, they just wanted to make everything, you know, unilateral. Okay, we're all fine.
Yeah.
We're going to take you. We're going to make you all the things. Whereas here, and this is an example because there are other cultures that have the same thing happen where local deities that are within certain regions and certain aspects are thus suddenly as the group gets bigger and they start to engulf more peoples and lands and territories, they're taking these different deities and they're placing them on their little, you know, graft. If they don't have one, they're doing it arbitrarily. And sometimes they'll just meld them, then they become separate like Frigg and Freya.
And we can't know.
Right. So we can only, and I guess the best thing is that, you know, when you do go and work with the deity, it's, you know, you ask, you listen, does this ring true? Do you feel comfortable with it? Is, you know, I mean, there's a lot of personal interaction. You just don't take everything like you do in the real world. You question. You know,
right.
I think that's the most important part of humanity is with the questioning. It's not because we don't believe. It's because you need to feel comfortable and feel that it makes sense to you to be able to work with them.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But he definitely, I mean, he has his eight-legged horse, which, God bless America, I don't have a clue how to say, but it's
Near.
With an S.
Flipnir.
I kind of, excuse me?
Flipnir.
Flipnir, okay.
Yep.
I love the fact, and I think I've mentioned this once before, is that at least with the Scandinavian and the Norse and the Germanic, they name everything. They don't just name their horse. They name their spear, their sword, their necklace, their chair, you know. And I'm thinking that's a very personal relationship with these items, these individual things that you have in your world. I know we tend to, a lot of us, name our cars and name our, you know, our computers sometimes. And, you know, and people go, why do you anthropomorphize something? And I'm thinking, well, we come with it in our genetics. Think about this particular thing we're talking about here, Odin and the items. We make a personal relationship. So why wouldn't you name your sword, for heaven's sake?
Right, right. Well, and it shows that they're not just items, but they are magical. They have a spirit. It's more than just a thing.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, and it's funny because there are so many stories about Odin doing different things and where they go and what they do and what he does that, you know, for us to have even tried to take several of them and talk about them, we'd have our 2-hour show without a problem. Bam, there you go. But it's very interesting because I'm going to say this. I know we're going to have a little downgrade here. When you deal with Odin and you suddenly see Marvel Comics Odin and Thor and all of the different things, your brain has to turn off because you've got to stop what the visuals were there and go back. And that was a lot of my resetting because of the things that I have seen in the more recent past of, you know, comic book characters coming on the screen or the comic books themselves. So, I don't know. This has been more of a challenge than I think any of the other deities for me to stay present with what the information is giving me and not what has been popularized in our culture.
Right. So. Yeah. You know, I think it's a double-edged sword, right? Because I am a fan and in support of more people getting connected to earth-based spirituality. I'm not going out and knocking on people. I think that's why.
Right.
I am a fan of more people connecting, and I'm a fan of people connecting to the ancient gods. I think that's important. So I predicted when the first Thor movie came out, I said there's going to be an upswing in people who are interested in Norse magic and mythology and reconstructionism of those traditions, and it's totally happened. Even talking about like those racist groups like the Sons of Odin and stuff like that, that has really sparked and taken on more energy since that Thor movie came out. So I'm in favor of that. The trouble is, you know, people are taking some of this popular story and thinking that that's what it was for the ancient folks. And, you know, go watch Thor. These are space beings who have a connection to the Earth planet. And, you know, that's not based on anything having to do with ancient Norse belief or Norse mythology. So, you know, there are interesting truths to the comic books and have been from the comic books. There are some interesting truths there. Just like if you watch the movie The Craft or Practical Magic, there are some interesting truths about witchcraft and Wicca and paganism in those movies, but they're just seeds and kernels of truth. They're not the full truth.
Correct.
So yeah, it's a double-edged sword because there are, you know, folks running around thinking that that's what it is, and the way Odin shows up in those movies is Odin. It's a facet of Odin because now he's being reborn to our modern culture, but it's different.
So I think we might want to take a break. What do you think?
Yes, that's probably true. All right, well, we'll be back.
We will.
After these.
You're listening to The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron, a radio podcast on the LMC Radio Network. Stay tuned, as more magic is coming your way right after these messages.
The LMC Radio Network is a media alliance whose excellent shows include The Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour with Catherine Ironwood and Conjurman Ollie, Sundays 3 to 4:30. The Crystal Silence League Hour with John St. Germain, Tuesdays 5 to 6. Fit and Foxy with Madame Nadia and Jaya Dania, Wednesdays 6 to 7. The Now You Know Show with Professor Charles Porterfield, Thursdays 6 to 7:30. And The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron with Elvira Love and Phoenix LeFay, Fridays 6 to 7. All times Pacific, add 3 hours for Eastern, sponsored by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and online at luckymojo.com.
It gets shorter each time I hear it.
And it's still a little bit longer than it should be, but that's nothing we're going to talk about right now.
Right. So we'll go back to Odin. Much better, much better.
Yes, yes, yes. War and fighting and violence. Yay!
Yay! Well, you know, the interesting thing is when I started to read, we talk about war and fighting, and I started to read what Ragnarok, the Twilight of the Gods, is, you know, what their whole process was and they were talking about, and, you know, Fenris Wolf is going to beat up Odin and blah, and everybody's gone. Is that if you look at it, and maybe this is just my perspective because I'm farther down the road of history, is that it felt like a pre-cognitive reference to when humankind would no longer be as engaged with the pantheonic deities, that there would be a major change. They would die. They would go away. Some of them would, you know, a couple survived, obviously. But that being the case, I looked at that and I'm going, you know, if you didn't know any better, somebody was, you know, saying, well, Christianity and monotheism is going to take over the next layer of this. And so it was really kind of bizarre when I read that. And I didn't read the whole thing about what Ragnarok is and all of that. And, of course, now we have a movie out, as we were talking about, that is about, you know, Thor and Ragnarok and all that. But I thought the bigger picture was really fascinating about that.
Yeah. So. It's grim. And, you know, there's something grim about the Norse system anyway. Their life would have been very hard for folks, the ancient Norse folks and Scandinavian folks. Life was hard. And so there is something sort of grim about, you know, everything is facing the end of days. And I guess that's true for humans. Like, now that I've said it out loud, I'm like, yeah, I guess humans do that all the time. We're always looking for the end of days. How many times was the world supposed to end in the last decade?
Right. Right. And, you know, we had the Mayan calendar. It just sort of, we ended. And, you know, but then I think you have the revisionists who go, well, we end the old and we begin a whole new one that hasn't been discovered, because you have to get to the end to find the new, kind of a thing. So you have and I'm not going to say this in a negative way, obviously, you have the ascensionists who are new age people who see us leaving this energy planet and bringing all of this positive things to the fifth level, or the, you know, beyond the third, fourth dimensions, and going upwards. And that becomes idyllic. You know, it isn't just like heaven, or, you know, the things that are revisioned on other cultures and religions. But it's become a new thing. And I don't mean new like yesterday. I mean the last 15, 20 years.
Right, right.
So,
yeah.
We don't just end, you know. I know. Now that they found a new planet that's really just like Earth, I'm thinking, oh, good, as somebody said, let's all of the environmentalists go over there and leave everybody here that messed the planet up.
Right.
You know, but I don't know. Maybe that's I heard that and I started to laugh like you. I thought, yeah, that would be the ultimate. But it's going to be the other way around, you know. You know, kind of leave messes like kids.
Right.
But being that as it is. So we have Odin, we have this incredibly powerful energy deity, and yet he has also got this other side of questing for knowledge and looking for things. That fascinated me, because it's like he's not saying, well, I have everything, I know everything, so, you know, great, come to me.
Yeah. Yeah, and that a lot of what sort of Odin's Bible, if you will, the Havamal is a book of wisdom verses that are attributed to Odin. And the Havamal, the word translates as sayings of the High One. So it's literally a book of Odin's beliefs, right? The rules of what it is to be a good person. And there's there's a lot of random advice in this book, and some of it's very practical and some of it's very spiritual. You know, like one of the things is, a man shouldn't hold on to the cup, but drink in moderation, you know? So there's things like that. There's rules about politeness and hosting and taking care of people when they stay in your home. The Norse and the ancient Scandinavians is taking care of guests. And that's a Celtic thing too, right? Taking care of guests. And one of the things in the Havamal is the writings of when Odin hung himself from Yggdrasil on the tree. Knowledge. Do you mind if I read a little bit? It's just a little paragraph.
Oh, no, go right ahead. I think that would be wonderful.
Okay, so there's lots of translations of this, and they're all vastly different. So I'm going to read a short translation of just this little paragraph, but know that there is hundreds of different translations. So here we go. I know that I hung on a wind-rocked tree 9 whole nights with a spear wounded, and to Odin offered myself to myself. from that tree of which no one knows from what root springs, bread no one nor a horn to drink. Downward I peered to the runes, applied myself, wailing learnt them, then fell down. There you go.
Wow.
So he offers himself to himself in order to learn. And that is literally what we do. That is how
true.
We seek wisdom. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because that really, it's kind of interesting because they you know, when the Oracle of Delphi would give the prophecies that she would give out, you know, they were always these cryptic things. And in all of the different mythologies, they have, you know, like the Sphinx giving there's cryptic messages or statements or riddles. And they even apply here in how Odin does his poetry to put out the information that he's talking about. It's always done with his poetry and this aspect that is not, you know, hi, you go from A to B to C to D. You know, it's not linear. And I think that is a testament to working with the other world.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So he's definitely got some, you know, things. And of course, every time I hear that story or I hear things that allude to that, I keep seeing the hanged man in the tarot card.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Every time, so when I do readings, when the hanged man comes up, I always, card is based off the story of Odin, and I talk a little bit about it because, you know, the thing is, the hanged man is kind of about being stuck, you know, and needing to take a pause and needing self-reflection and some of that energetic. And we know Odin hung there. We know Odin gained wisdom, and we know Odin got down, but we don't know how he got down. And that's the hard part of the hangman, is how do you get down now that you've gotten yourself strung up?
Right, right. I always think of it as, you know, looking at a mirror. You know, we're in the world where things are one way, but the mirror is completely opposite. And if you're seeing the hanged man, he's hanging upside down.
Right.
So the process of looking at something or being in a situation where you are in an opposing position to what normally is out there, either in your world or your personal life or whatever's going on. So that, again, presents us with, like everything, it's funny you talk about trickster, is that we have consistently talked about Loki being the trickster in the pantheon, in the Norse process, the Norse energies. But it's really weird that, and I say this not in a strange weird, but just that Odin becomes the ultimate trickster.
Right.
He's like the master trickster, and then Loki is kind of taking it on his own level.
Right. And, you know, Loki isn't one of the gods. He is an frost giant, an ice giant.
Right.
But he was basically kidnapped by Odin and raised as one of the gods. And so here we have, you know, this energy, this creature, this Loki person who technically doesn't belong with the gods and yet is raised as one of them. And Odin, the ultimate trickster, fighting light, you know. So it makes sense that he ended up the way that he ended up. And I'm not bashing Loki. I know there's a lot of sensitive people who love Loki and get irritated with all the Loki bashing. I'm not bashing Loki.
my daughter named one of her cats Loki. She was going on the Greek pantheon, and then she sort of took off on this other one. And the cat obviously really is Loki, because, I mean, it's completely opposite to all these cat-like things, and it's very strange. When I've gone to visit, it's like, you definitely are Loki. And then he goes away, kind of, you know, he kind of goes away and has other places he obviously hangs with. And you think of, you know, when you get an animal and you bond and you wait for the name, or you choose a name, it always made me think, the old thing is, be careful for what you wish for, because there's this other side of it, and that also is tricksterish. So presents you with that whole process. But it's a digression off of Odin, but then again, I know people, we were talking about in the fire, the dog that was named Odin that saved the sheep.
Yeah.
You know, I think it was the sheep, wasn't it? Or were they goats?
Goats. They were goats.
Goats.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we should probably, before we run out of time, talk about some of the things that are also connected to Odin. No word just left my brain. Attributes, guides, friends
attributes.
Of Odin. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, so we mentioned Sleipnir, his eight-legged horse, and there's a whole story there about how that horse comes to be, so feel free to read about it. Loki's involved. I'll just leave it at that. Odin has two ravens, Húnin and Mimir. Those words translate as thought and memory. And Húnin and Mimir travel the world, and basically they're like spies.
Yep, they are.
They peep on all of us, and then every night they fly home to Odin and they tell him everything that's happened in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty great. He also has two wolves, Geri and Freki. I'm not really sure how to pronounce the G. Anyway, so he has two wolves, and he has a spear, the Gungnir, which is a very special spear that never misses its mark. He's often seen in a cloak and a hat, and he has one eye, and sometimes it's just a hole, and sometimes it's got a nice little patch, depending on how he's feeling that day. And he has many sons because he's kind of a slut and spreads his seed all over the world. But there are two sons that are most famous. Obviously, Thor. We all know about Thor.
Right.
At least we should, because, you know, I'm a fan. And Baldur. Baldur is his other son, who is the most beautiful of all.
Uh-huh.
They have two different mothers. And then there's Loki, the not official son, but a son nonetheless. And that's probably like the most important ones. His father, primordial being Ymir or Mir, is sort of where he was born from. And that is that primordial being that him and his brothers to make the world. Then the other important piece of Odin is Mimir, and Mimir owned the well. Mimir was the guardian of the well, and that's where Odin gave his eye in order to gain wisdom. To drink from Mimir's well would give any of us unlimited wisdom. We would know all the things. And of course, you can't have all the wisdom without giving some sacrifice. So he gave his eye. And then later in the tale, Mimir is killed. And so Odin takes Mimir's body and embalms the head. He cuts the head off and embalms it with special herbs that will keep it wise. And so Odin carries Mimir's head around asking advice, and it kind of is like you mentioned the Sibyls of where are they from?
Delphi.
Thank you. Holy crap, my brain. Delphi. Mimir's head kind of works like that. Odin asks Mimir, you know, what do I do? And Mimir says, you know, da 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 da, in some sort of rhyme that Odin has to figure out. And that work of prophesizing was women's work, but Odin was gifted that work because he had all of this wisdom, and some of it was his connection to the head of Mimir, which is gruesome and weird, and I love it.
And there is in that the concept of the head, the talking head, is also part of the Scottish and Irish, if I'm not mistaken. There's mythology within that. There's a talking head as well.
Yeah, and Wales.
Wales, there. See, I knew I was in the general area.
Yeah, Bran the Blessed. His head is buried under, buried in London, and it faces the ocean so that no one will ever invade. And up till now, in 2017, it has been true.
True. There you go. But that the other thing we should mention is that Odin with I'm going to butcher these Hönir and Lodu created the first man and woman. And I thought, interesting enough, the first man's name is Ask, A-S-K.
Yeah.
And then the woman's is Imbal, or Imbal, E-M-B-L-A.
Mm-hmm.
And they were the first. So they created, and it was out of the trunk of the ash trees.
Right.
So,
right.
I like
and
that better than being out of dirt.
I do, too. And the ash tree, too, there's all kinds of symbolism around that, right? And trees are a thing. The world tree, Yggdrasil, is this huge tree that all of the realms are sprung from. And, you know, the world is split up into nine different realms. And there's where the humans live, the underworld, and where the dark elves and the light elves. And it's a long, complicated thing, but... it's believed that Yggdrasil is a giant ash tree. So clearly there is something about the ash tree in Scandinavian and Germanic systems that's very important. So again, that's something to look at and research and learn about if this is something you are curious about and want to learn more about and dig into Norse mythology. And
yeah, and obviously, you know, now I'll forever be looking for an old man with a long white beard and a staff and a floppy hat and one eye,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's kind of like, okay, it works in more than just that, I'm sure. But I'm like,
yeah,
okay. But,
yeah. And I'll say, you know, with that trickster energy, Odin, I know several folks who work with Odin and not necessarily Norse gods, but just specifically Odin. And I'm friends with several folks who work with Norse gods exclusively. And Odin shows up in all kinds of ways.
Mm-hmm.
And even to the point where I have a dear one who has a story of facing an old man with a long beard and one eye, like out in public. he just shows up, and it's interesting. So tapped by Odin, or if you are interested in the Norse gods, don't be surprised when they show up in unsuspecting ways. Yeah.
Yeah. It and I think that's true of, well, I'm going to say this in a generic, in all the deities, they will show up.
Mm-hmm.
They just don't necessarily conform to the way they're described in the ancient texts. Because literally they're going to have to be, you know, kind of, they can't come in a toga unless, of course, it's a toga party. But
right.
A lot of it is, you know, even the archangels. I swear, out of all the things I ever thought I would wind up having, you know, a visitation was we were out in Chinatown in San Francisco, my friend and our two children and off we were wandering, and there was this guy. And he, you know, not exactly the most clean guy, but he was kind of standing, you know, we thought more than likely he was peeing on the doorstep or something because he was kind of got his back to us. And then he turned around and he goes, the Kuan Yin temple is right down the street, because we were trying to find the Kuan Yin temple, right? And we never said that. We were just like, I think it's this direction. I don't know. We're lost. And he turned around and did that. And what I eventually found out that was Sandalphon. And I'm like, you know, so they come in different ways, whether it's Odin or any of the others. And you really, there will be a distinct point that you can't find a way to justify out of it in our in our logic. So, so there we are. I mean, we're almost at the end of our hour. That went fast.
It did go fast. So. I can't remember what our following week is supposed to be about.
Well, this coming week, we're going to be doing magic. What is magic?
Right, but that will air before this episode.
But after this one, which is the prequel, will be what is magic. I don't know quite.
I can't remember.
Oh, dear. We are losing our memory. And
actually, I think it might be a to be determined still, because we had something in mind and we had to change our plan. So, we don't know. It'll be a surprise.
It'll be a surprise, and we will probably, by the next time we are on radio, we will have our answer for you guys.
Yeah, which is tomorrow.
which is tomorrow.
For us, but not for anyone listening.
That's true. No.
Anywho.
A time and a place. But yeah. It was great. I enjoyed this. There's a lot of information and still much more that we didn't get even close to touching.
Oh, yeah. We just barely scratched the surface.
Yeah. So, but I will see you tomorrow, and with all of the folks out there, we will be seeing you the week after, and have a good Thanksgiving coming up, or afterwards, actually.
We hope you had a good Thanksgiving.
Had a good Thanksgiving. Past tense. We're in no time. It's like we don't know.
Right. We exist beyond time and space.
True.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
All right.
My lovelies, have a wonderful, wonderful time and enjoy.
Thank you. All right. Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to The Witch, The Priestess, and The Cauldron, a radio podcast on the LMC Radio Network. Our podcast airs live every Friday at 6 p.m. Pacific and will be available for download. Questions or comments on this show or ideas for upcoming shows can be sent to our website, and that's at www.witchpriestesscauldron.com. Again, that's witchpriestesscauldron.com. On behalf of Elvira, Phoenix, Alan, and myself, Gwion Raven, a big merry meet and merry part and merry meet again. Blessed be.
UC San Diego is one of the top-ranking universities for earning potential. If you're an experimenter, a maker, or a breaker, an education here could really pay off. To learn more, visit our campus or go to ucsd.edu. UC San Diego is one of the top-ranking universities for earning potential. If you're an experimenter, a maker, or a breaker, an education here could really pay off. To learn more, visit our campus or go to ucsd.edu.
If you have an appetite for fun, then the Disney California Adventure Food and Wine Festival is the place to be. March 2nd through April 12th, only at the Disneyland Resort. Enjoy deliciously fresh food, California wines, craft beers, specialty cocktails, live music, and more. All served up with a dash of Disney magic. Get more details at disneyland.com/foodandwine. If you have an appetite for fun, then the Disney California Adventure Food and Wine Festival is the place to be. March 2nd through April 12th, only at the Disneyland Resort. Enjoy deliciously fresh food, California wines, craft beers, specialty cocktails, live music, and more. All served up with a dash of Disney magic. Get more details at disneyland.com/foodandwine.